Welcome to Face to Face. Face to Face is an in-depth look at the life and career of a popular sports figure from a Christian perspective. Now, here's your host of Face to Face, Tom Rust.
All right, thank you, and welcome to Face to Face, one more edition of Face to Face. Thank you for being here today, and we hope you enjoy the show. Every once in a while, you know, I've done interviews with athletes from basically around the world, basically from East Coast to West Coast and some from foreign countries. But every now and then you find an athlete, if you will, who lives down the street. And with us today is a guy that's been kind of a longtime friend, and he has accomplished just about as much as anybody on this earth. His name is Walter Glover, and Walter's a mountain climber. And a few years ago, he took on a project to climb the seven tallest peaks, each of the tallest peaks on every continent. And he thought he would start right out by going to the biggest and the best. He went to Mount Everest. And he did a climb to the Mount Everest base camp, not to the top of Mount Everest, but to the Mount Everest base camp, and then wrote a book about it. And very, very interesting, and it was easy to do an interview with Walter, just basically going over to his house a couple of miles away from my own house in Columbus, Indiana, and to sit down with Walter and to realize that not only does it take tremendous perseverance to do what he did in getting to Mount Everest and getting up to the base camp, but it also takes a lot of training, and he definitely would fit the mold of being in a in good shape in his 60s and being an athlete. So we thought you'd like to hear the adventurous story of Walter Glover, the mountain climber from Columbus, Indiana. We'll take a break, and when we come back, you'll hear more about Walter Glover. So don't go away. You're listening to Face to Face. All right, welcome to Face to Face. Glad to have you with us today. And with us today, our guest is Walter Glover. He's not only a guest, he's a remarkable man. He's also a neighbor, a good friend. We've known each other for quite a while, and he's done some tremendous things. Walter is a mountain climber. I'm going to call you Wally because that's how I know you. I know
that's
you
fine,
as Wally.
Tom.
Is that all right?
That's fine, Tom.
This man, at age 68, is a mountain climber, having climbed the seven summits, the highest mountains on each of the seven continents. Wally, it's glad to have you back on the air.
Thanks, Tom. But let me jump in and say I've been on five of the seven summits. I've missed two of them in Alaska and Antarctica, so I don't want your audience thinking incorrect things.
Are those still goals?
They are not. Those are technical climbs in which you rope up to the person in front of you, behind you. You've got on big clunky mountaineering boots and crampons, and you're carrying an ice axe, and you've got a safety helmet on because of rock fall. And I decided at age 65, when I climbed Rainier the second time, that it was time to bring this stuff to a close. I'm still doing mountains, and we'll tell you about some of my plans and what I just accomplished in New Hampshire last month, but they are not technical climbs. No. In Antarctica and Denali and Alaska are.
Yeah, that would be quite a trip besides climbing the mountain just to get to Antarctica. I know that I have somebody that went on a cruise down there, but you gotta hit that pretty much right at the right time, don't you?
You're exactly right. You're exactly right.
Well, you got started in this kind of late, didn't you? How old were you when you decided to take this on?
The tender age of 59.
Wow.
It'll be 10 years come this May, and I'm hoping to do a 10th anniversary climb down in Peru and South America, and hopefully we'll be on top of a sacred mountain down there at the same time I was at Everest Base Camp when I was at 59 years old.
Now, yeah, you started with Everest, is that right?
Well, I mean, if you're going to be ridiculous about this, you might as well be ridiculous about it. But my intention was never to climb Everest at that time. It was to be at base camp, which is 17,600. When you consider where we are in Columbus is 600 feet, that's 3 vertical miles higher than where we are in Bartholomew County.
Let's talk about how you did that. First of all, let's talk about when you did it. You did that, what, in 2007? Was that when you did it?
That's correct.
2007. How do you prepare for that, having never really climbed a mountain, I guess? How do you prepare for that?
I had skied mountains, so I knew a little something about altitude and elevation, but when we live in southern Indiana, you can't import altitude or elevation. I had been on a website called eversnews.com that is defunct now, and so I knew a little something about how to train, and I started training. I was there in April and May of 2007, excuse me, and I started training really back in probably November, October, and I was trying to get as many... I was trying to do a minimum of 3 miles daily, with one of those miles being vertical. And the Parks Department here and the benefactors, the Force family and the Shoemaker family, having the tower down at Millrace, 100 feet high. That's an exaggeration. It's 98 feet high. 131 steps. And my engineering friends figured out that up, down, once, times five, times up and down, is the equivalent of a linear mile. Hmm. So I would have my pack on, I would have my mountaineering boots, and I would go down there. And if I was at my hospital ministries, back then it was North Vernon, I'd just find the stairs, or I'd go to Muscatatuck Park, any place I could find elevation. And saw a physician who understood elevation and the physiology of altitude, who gave me two medications. If you need to take this one, dexamethasone gooses your metabolism, you need to say to yourself, your climb has come to an end.
Now, yeah, the one thing you cannot prepare for, I would imagine, is altitude sickness. And what are the symptoms? What does altitude sickness feel like?
It's called acute mountain sickness. And one of the key things is you're not thinking clearly. You've got just such a throbbing headache. You're having difficulty breathing. Your respirations get a little out of sync. Your steps aren't precise and even, and you've got some dizziness. And I had acute mountain sickness at base camp. When I talked to that physician on my return home, possibly the beginnings of cerebral edema, but clearly acute mountain sickness. And so, when we got to Everest Base Camp, the first thing that happened was this avalanche came roaring down the face, and we're at base camp, and we're not too far away. And all I could say was, oh my God, that's an avalanche. Had I been thinking clearly, I would have said a prayer to make sure that no one was in harm's way on the mountain, that we weren't in harm's way, because we were right in the crosshairs of the thing coming down. If it would have continued, I would have reached for a camera to take a picture, as did my Australian friend Declan. But I did none of these things. I did not look for the dexamethasone, because I wasn't thinking.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
How long did it take you from the time that you started your trek? And do you start your trek in like Kathmandu or?
Good question. We flew from Kathmandu. It's about a 30-minute plane ride to Lukla. But back in the day, when Sir Edmund Hillary and Tenzing Norgay in the 20s, when the English and the Swiss would climb Everest, they would trek from Kathmandu because you couldn't fly in. That would help them with acclimatization. But it's called climb high, sleep low. You go high, and then you come back down that night to a lower elevation. Mm-hmm. And God has given us this tremendous body that knows how to acclimatize. And it does it when you climb high and sleep low.
What motivated you to get into this? What motivated you to suddenly see Mount Everest and decide I'm gonna make this trek?
You believe in voices?
Yeah, sometimes.
Well, in 2005, I'd been checking this eversnooze.com website and was just fascinated by these elite men and women that were climbing Everest. So I would just get online and read about them and look at the pictures. And it was when the internet started, you could broadcast through a satellite phone these images and this video. And I was fascinated. And in 05, this voice comes on into my head, into my heart, and says, you know, you could do that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I dissed the voice. I mean, for crying out loud. Yeah, right. I could do that at age 57, 58. Get out of town. And you know what? The voice went quiet. And I never gave it another thought until 365 days later. It's 06. And the voice comes back again while I'm on the website, eversnooze.com. And it says, you know, you could do that. More volume, more urgency. And it continued to talk and didn't let me interrupt.
Yeah.
You could trek to Everest Base Camp. I just kind of thought, clock stopped, my heart stopped. And I thought, well, yeah, maybe I could do that. And the next, and I didn't intend this, but the next click of the mouse took me to a website about trekking to Everest Base Camp. That's April, May of 06. By Labor Day, I had booked a climb to Everest Base Camp. And the woman said, Walter, no one books a trip this early. And I said, well, I am. And what I was doing was, it was an accountability step. I wanted to have that on my calendar, and that would cause me to, in an orderly way, train for it, to get the right equipment, to do everything I could do in southern Indiana to be prepared. And so that was, this was my dream shot. This was for me. I had no idea of doing the Seven Summits and other climbs. That wasn't that, this was going to Everest Base Camp.
Wasn't, our guest is Wally Glover. He is a mountain climber who started his journey on the big one, started journeying, went to the Everest Base Camp. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk about more mountains and what he's done since then. So don't go away. You are listening to Face to Face. Welcome back to Face to Face. Our guest is my friend Wally Glover, Walter Glover to many people. And yes, you said that climbing these Seven Summits wasn't your goal. You came back and you climbed. What are some of the, what are the other mountains that you have climbed?
Well, it's probably important to say, because of the acute mountain sickness that I suffered at Everest, before I left, my friend, our friend, mutual friend, David Ketchum, had said, come see my mission field in Ghana. I want you to see this, and then we'll go climb Mount Kilimanjaro. And just blithely, I said, put me in, coach, give me the ball. I didn't know anything about mountains. At 09, it was Kilimanjaro, and I was blessed to summit at sunrise. And those two mountains are the subject of a book. And we raised $25,000 at Kilimanjaro. I pay all my own expenses, by the way. All the money that's raised flows through to support the youth obesity programs at my three hospital ministries. And I thought, well, this is interesting. 2 years later, you know, I got to Everest Base Camp, not to be immodest, but got that one. Wanted to summit Kilimanjaro, and my trek guide was Godlison, a wonderful Lutheran gentleman who had been climbing Kilimanjaro for 15 years. I got Kilimanjaro. I'm thinking, well, maybe, just maybe, I might be able to do the Seven Summits, but let's just take it one mountain at a time. So after that came Elbrus in Russia, 18,500 feet. And then Australia followed Kosciuszko. And then it was on to Over the Stove, Aconcagua, which is the highest mountain outside the Himalayan mountains, and it's in the southern hemisphere. And I went, even though I didn't summit, everything was being summited with the exception of Everest Base Camp. And I'm thinking, you know, this is real, and how blessed am I? Especially being from southern Indiana. Aconcagua, I was a little short of the summit at 21,000 feet. But, you know, I was undaunted. I just wasn't deterred at all. I was going to go to Rainier to, you've got to demonstrate to the examining guide satisfaction that you have certain competencies to go to Antarctica and to Denali in Alaska. And that's when I took a fall, and the fall led to a diagnosis of having an aneurysm on my aortic arch. At the same time, they found two other aneurysms, one in my stomach and one in my intestine.
So Rainier changed things for you.
Rainier, that was the time when I went back the second. I fell on the first one and then had open heart surgery, and I was turning 65, so I told St. Vincent. And so went back to Rainier just to tag the summit. And then, because I wanted to continue the adventures and to continue being an advocate for youth obesity, I did the 490-mile pilgrimage across Spain, the Way of St. James. James, the epistle writer in the New Testament, it's believed that his remains reside in a reliquary chapel at Santiago de Compostela. And, you know, just last month, it was kind of like the same time between Everest and Kilimanjaro. With a local friend, Ed Eckerly, we went to Mount Washington in New Hampshire, and it's not a technical climb. It is a very challenging climb, especially when you get on the wrong route.
Now, let's talk about your the money that you've raised for childhood obesity. What brought you to that?
Well, it was in North Vernon, there were a lot of heavy kids, and I knew that, but what I did was I went. We did a survey, and the survey showed that youth obesity was an issue for families that were responding personally within their family and an issue in the community. At the same time, I had held a meeting for the hospital foundation that was getting started that I was leadership for. What should we raise money for? And this was independent of the survey. We didn't know that result yet. And several of the people, the foundation board members in the community, said youth obesity is an issue. There's two things independent of each other. I went to see the pediatric clinical staff at the hospital and said, if I could raise money for anything for kids, what would you have me raise money for? Looked at me and said, well, duh. Youth obesity. It seems to me that was the Holy Spirit. Three things independent. And so I went to my boss, the CEO, Joe Roach, and I said, here's the deal. This is what I'd like to do. And he said, it sounds very well supported, and I'm confident the foundation board would support it. So we raised 25 grand. Overall, the climbs raised $130,000 for youth obesity, 150 kids at the plus minus at the three hospitals received training in nutrition and exercise. Their parents also were trained. Sometimes it was their grandparents to have healthy behaviors around nutrition and exercise and screen time.
Let's talk about the spirituality of the mountains. Let's talk about where you're at. What does Christ mean to you in your life?
Well, it can be the mountains in nature as the result of God's creative power. My thinking on that is He invented science, and the mountains have a scientific evolution over hundreds of thousands of years, but it's also in the people. It's in the sacred spaces that the where the people worship. And my trek guide is an example on Kilimanjaro. His name was Godlisten. I said, Godlisten, what were your parents thinking when they so named you? And he said, Walter, my parents wanted me to have a relationship with the divine. So when you say my name, when I hear you say my name, when I write my name, I'm reminded of my ancestry. The Sherpas at Everest, who are Tibetan Buddhist, and I'll translate this to Christianity in the Bible in just a second. They don't say, hey, bro, how you doing? Good morning. They say namaste, which translates, the divine in me resides in me and in you. Well, implicit in that greeting is that divinity resides in the speaker and the hearer. In the Old Testament, we talk about being made in God's image and likeness. Those words mean the same thing to me. God listened on Kilimanjaro. I ask him to sing a song. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, and all I'm hearing are my boots go through the volcanic scree. And I said, God, he sings something. Yes, Papa Walter, what should I sing? I said, sing. I'd heard him sing, What a Friend We Have in Jesus. He starts singing loudly in Swahili. And you know what? The mountaineering guides up above us, there were a few who heard it. They started singing. All the mountaineering guides below us, and there were a lot of them because we were making good time, they started singing. I'd like to tell you that the theologian from St. Meinrad, me, was trying for an evangelical moment. I wasn't. I wanted a change of pace. But, you know, Julie Andrews and the climb, it's about the mountain climbing movie, Sound of Music. She talked about the hills are alive with the sound of music. Those words come from Psalms. This was the hill, the mountain is alive with the sound of music. People I didn't even know that night in camp talked about, did you hear and they called it the communal singing on the mountain. It was pretty powerful. Timeless moment. So those are some examples of the spirituality, but you're out there in creation, and it's breathtaking.
Yeah. Our time is up. I wish we had more time, because I know you've got so many stories, but let's close this way. I know that there's a favorite verse that goes along with what you're talking about here. Let's talk about what your favorite verse is that is included in your book.
The favorite verse comes from Isaiah chapter 52, verse 7. How beautiful, how blessed are the feet of him on the mountain who brings good news, who brings glad tidings, who proclaims a peace, who publishes a peace, who says, your God reigns. And it is in the book. And the book for Columbus people is available at Viewpoint Books. It's Mount Everest and Mount Kilimanjaro. If you're outside Columbus, it's available at Barnes & Noble. And it is also available on Amazon.com.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your efforts. Appreciate all the things that you've done. And again, I wish we had more time, because I know you got a lot of stories, but maybe people will read the book and we'll find that out. And thank you for what you do.
Well, you're welcome. There's going to be a second book come out in the spring, and it will be about a pilgrimage across Spain to, it's called The Way of St. James, St. James the Epistle Writer. We'll get together next spring and talk again if you want.
All right, we can do that.
God bless
Wally
you.
Wally Glover, our mountain climbing friend and neighbor. We'll take a break and be back, so don't go away. You're listening to Face to Face. Welcome back to Face to Face. As you have heard, Walter was able to climb a number of peaks, but health kind of shut down his ability to get to all seven. And he did that walk across Spain, so he still has a lot of drive, still has a lot of ability, and still has a lot of energy, and hopefully he can continue that and not have any more health issues that will slow him down, because he certainly is an ambitious guy and a very giving person to fight childhood obesity. So that's a terrific thing that he has done. And, of course, underlying all of that was the fact that he is spiritually a man of God, and someone who says that he couldn't do it without the help of God. And certainly, I think if I were in that same situation, I would be praying a lot. That's not anything that I would have any possible potential of doing. But we appreciate Walter Glover coming on the show, and appreciate what he has accomplished, not only for childhood obesity, but also for what he has done for the Lord. Well, I want to let you know that we're not too far away from our face-to-face golf outing. This will be our 19th golf outing, and it's at Otter Creek Country Club, one of the Otter Creek Golf Course, one of the finest golf courses, not only in Indiana, but in the United States, Robert Trent Jones Course. And you can be there, and we've got a lot of things to give away. We've got possibility of a new car if you hit a hole-in-one, but you don't have to go that far. You don't have to be that good. Just hit a long putt. Just hit a long drive, and we've got great prizes. And really, we have prizes for everybody. As soon as you walk in the gate, we'll be giving prizes to you. So hopefully you'll be able to do that. You can sign up at our website, and our website is at facetofaceradio.com, facetofaceradio.com. And oh, by the way, Purdue fans, we've got a special treat for you, and that is our guest speaker. Our speaker this year is Austin Parkinson. Austin Parkinson, who played on Purdue's basketball team. I think he played on Gene Katie's final team at Purdue. Now he is the head women's basketball coach at IUPUI in Indianapolis in the Summit League. And they just had the best season they've ever had. 24 wins, got to the postseason. And you're going to enjoy hearing about not only Austin's time as a basketball coach, but also his tremendous love for the Lord. Well, as we take a break today, and by the way, once again, let me give you that, facetofaceradio.com. That's where you can go to find out. And hope you'll sign up and get on board. Well, as we close for you today, we want to take you to a psalm, Psalm 100, verse 4, and this is a psalm of praise, and this says, enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. Give thanks to him and praise his name. I know there's a basketball program nearby called Enter His Courts, and it comes from this verse. Enter his gates with thanksgiving and enter his courts with praise. Give thanks to him and praise his name. That's about it for us. We look forward to having you back next week. We'll have another Christian athlete. Till then, this is Tom Russ saying, remember this, no matter where you go, no matter what you do, be a good sport. Goodbye, everyone.
You've been listening to Face to Face with Tom Rust. For a free copy of today's program or for more information, please write to Face to Face Ministries, P.O. Box 125, Columbus, Indiana 47202. Or call Face to Face Ministries at 812-376-3000. Or toll free at 1-800-479-0952. You can also find us on the web at facetofaceradio.com. Join us again next week as Tom Rust goes face to face.